This is a reading of the early lectures of Rudolf Steiner, entitled The Christian Mystery. This is lecture 4.4, entitled Who Are the Rosicrucians? Given on February 16, 1907 in Leipzig. For those who read theosophical literature, there is something uncertain and unclear hovering around the name Rosicrucian, as if there were a secret lying behind it. Many regard it as a term designating people in the 18th century who engaged in all kinds of magic. In the works of personalities who want to research the Rosicrucians with historical objectivity, we sense a well-intended shrugging of the shoulders, as they seem to say that there was once a kind of brotherhood that had high ideals and a moral conception of progress. Perhaps something is also said concerning their symbolic formulas. In any case, scholarly works stress again and again that the Rosicrucians no longer exist. If the Rosicrucians had ever been what is described, then Rosicrucianism would have been an absurdity. Actually, they are among humanity's most valuable possessions. The secrets are never given out. Yet, if anything has really become known, it was through betrayal, or something similar, and is easily seen as foolishness or superstition. Such a view has nothing to do with what Rosicrucianism really was. However, something of what Rosicrucianism is can be found in a book that appeared in the year 1616, the author of which is Johann Valentin Andrea. Its title is The Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosenkreuz, and it portrays the path of development of a man who became a Rosicrucian. Later, Andrea published a book apparently retracting what he had said in the first book, but no one knew if it was meant seriously or as a jest. What can become public concerning genuine Rosicrucianism will be revealed to us in today's lecture. There has been some form of initiation in all ages. People are at different stages of development. There are people at a very high level who have been initiated into the deepest mysteries of the world. They know something of how worlds are created, how the earth arose, and how human beings are constantly achieving new levels of evolution. The greatest thing we can learn is to know the real secret of the human being, the future of the human being. Yes, there is a knowledge that actually has a lethal effect on human beings who are not prepared. If it were promulgated today without preparation, humanity would be done for. Humanity would be split. The largest portion would be destroyed, and the knowledge would have a beneficial effect on the smaller part. The secret would never be extracted from an initiate in an unauthorized fashion. There is no martyrdom that could effect it. If you demanded it from an initiate, he would never reveal it to an unauthorized person. The thought alone that one might have to reveal this secret would cause such a person to go insane or be killed. I present to you in a picture the perspective of the entire development connected with this secret, an avenue that apparently becomes narrower and narrower, even though the great secret will one day be revealed for everyone. Rosicrucianism is a way to be initiated. It was founded by Christian Rosenkreuz. There are various paths to initiation. One was taught by the ancient rishis to the Indians. That was the Eastern path of yoga. Then there is the Christian Gnostic path, and the third is the Rosicrucian path. All three paths lead to the peak of initiation. Usually, however, the fundamental differences in the spiritual and physical constitutions of Indians and Europeans are not ordinarily taken into consideration. It would be impossible for the European body to follow the Indian path. Furthermore, the influence of external circumstances, with their great variety, is not considered. You can see how, for example, in India, certain illnesses, cholera, smallpox, follow an entirely different course, in hot countries differently than in cold countries. The environment is very different and has a correspondingly distinct effect on all the sheaths of a human being. For this reason, it is a very strange opinion that the yoga path would be feasible for a European. This is an error. It was not known, to be sure, that Rosicrucians have been following a path of spiritual development since the 14th century. The Rosicrucian path is in no way unchristian. For many people, standing fervently and solidly in Christianity, the Christian Gnostic path is the right one, and they will achieve on this path the highest peak. But the number of such people is decreasing. Rosicrucianism harbors the deepest mysteries of Christianity, but, above and beyond that, it creates the possibility of removing all the doubt that people have today, caused by popular or even less popular views and attitudes. Today no one is protected from the most bitter doubt, which approaches us from everywhere. With the Christian training alone, people are not able to encounter this doubt in the right way. They do not know how to protect and defend themselves. You must not understand this in an external way. For example, if someone wanted to say, quote, "I do not read Haeckel, I am wrapping myself in my Christian worldview," unquote, then nothing would be achieved. We live in a time when people are entirely filled with the current civilization. When we use trains or the newly developed sources of light, we are making use of the laws of nature. No matter how much we close ourselves off, in every locomotive, in every artificial flame, these thoughts that are living in our spiritual environment are imparted to us. Even if some people choose to adhere to their Bible reading, their astral bodies, their soul bodies, would be surrounded by, in the night, by every possible destructive soul feeling. You do not know why you are nervous. Those people who are aware of the thoughts that stream in unconsciously know it. It is not so much materialistic science as such, but the entire spiritual atmosphere in which we believe. Religious devotion ruled during the 12th century. The church was both spiritually and externally the center. Those who had worked very hard fled to the house of spiritual power and found peace there. Today things are different. Rosicrucian training takes these factors into consideration and deals with everything that confronts modern human beings. What then is Rosicrucian training? You will hear here of high ideas. Whoever wishes to undergo this training must turn to those who have the corresponding knowledge. Even with the first steps on the path, the pupil will realize what is essential. Rosicrucian training brings about a complete transformation of the human being. Only when we acquire higher faculties can we become citizens of a higher world. There are 7 parts to Rosicrucian training. Proper study. The development of imagination. Learning the esoteric script. Discovery of the philosopher's stone. Self-knowledge of the human being as microcosm. Knowledge of the macrocosm. And recognition of divine blessedness. Often there are exceptions to the sequence, so that a teacher may, for example, choose the 5th stage to be the 4th, according to the individual pupil. You will ask if there is still today a genuine Rosicrucianism. Yes, there is, and it will achieve its greatest significance only in the future. There are also certain signs according to which Rosicrucian brothers can be recognized. Not many can step forward in public. Some work quietly, entirely in the background. Those who seek, find it, and those who do not find it can assume that the time has not yet come for them. But the time will come without fail. It often appears to be a complete accident. It may happen that you have to wait an extra 3 hours in a train station, waiting room, because of a snowstorm. A stranger comes up to you apparently entirely by accident. You then recognize him as your teacher. That is only one case that I will mention here. First there comes proper study. What is included? You will be led into worlds concerning which an ordinary person has no idea. It is necessary for you to find your way in them. Those who are dreamers with no firm stability in their thinking are not suited. Solid, reliable thinking is a requirement. The pupils must look around carefully. They must try to see things on every side of them clearly and with healthy eyes. But they must also be able to close off their senses. With these words, I am saying something that not everyone values properly, not even the greatest philosophers. Edward von Hartmann, for example, once said again and again that every thought always has something left over from the senses, be it a sound or color impression. This shows incredible immodesty. To maintain that thinking does not contain anything sense-perceptible is not possible. The path leading to such sense-free thinking is described in spiritual scientific literature and offered in lectures. Those who prove themselves to be suitable are led deeper into the knowledge. But the elementary portion of this knowledge is accessible to a large part of humanity. This study, brought to people today, which leads away from the sense-perceptible in the world, consists of a training of the thinking. These thoughts, then, have nothing to do with what surrounds us in the sensory world. Those wishing to penetrate even deeper must guide their minds to a strengthened thinking. I have attempted to give an introduction to such sense-free thinking in two books, titled Intuitive Thinking as a Spiritual Path and titled Truth and Science. Those who begin to deepen themselves in these books will notice how one thought succeeds another, following a certain necessary thought sequence. All those striving higher thereby receive a means to proper spiritual growth. Second is the acquisition of imagination. Here the activity of creating mental pictures is distinguished from ordinary thinking. Consider Goethe's words, that all things transitory are merely a parable, a metaphor for something higher. When you see someone with a happy or a sorrowful face, you do not merely say that there is a wrinkle or a tear rolling down the face. Rather, one describes one as a cheerful face and the other as a sad face. External appearances reveal the inner life. They are symbols or parables of the soul's experience. Everyone would admit that this applies to human beings. Everyone knows the difference between a human head and its image or reflection. Geologists describe the earth without concern for anything other than the purely physical structure. People do not realize that the earth is the body of a being and that certain plants are expressions of the cheerful and the sad spirit of the earth. Goethe knew how to see the earth as a body and knew what permeated it. In Faust, Part 1, verses 501-509, the spirit of the earth says, quote, "In the floods of life and creative storm, to and fro I wave, weave eternally, and birth and grave an eternal sea, a changeful weaving, a glowing life. So I create at the roaring loom of time, and fashion the living garment of God." Unquote. Everything on the earth is a symbolic image for what is happening in the inner life of the earth. People walk around on the surface of the earth. The earth can say, quote, "From my body grows what gives human beings bread." Unquote. In John's Gospel we read, quote, "Those who eat my bread step on me with their feet." Unquote. This thought expresses one of the profoundest mysteries of the Rosicrucian worldview. We acquire imagination by seeing something in the world represented symbolically or as metaphor. Logical thinking, however, must have been learned previously. In Rosicrucian training, no one would choose some other symbol. Each person experiences an image of eternity in everything. Here I must express in dialogue what is contained in a symbol that was first taught in temples in the Middle Ages and then in Rosicrucian schools. The teacher said to the student, quote, "Consider the plant, how it sinks its roots into the ground and turns its blossom, the location of the reproductive organs, upward to face the sun. The blossoming calyx is kissed by a ray of sunlight, and thus a new being arises. The ray of sunlight is also called the holy lance of love." Unquote. Even Darwin said that the root of the plant is to be compared to the human head. The human being is a plant turned upside down. The reproductive organs are shamefully directed toward the middle point of the earth. Animals stand between human beings and plants. The three kingdoms of nature are pictures, like a cross. Plato said that the world soul has been crucified on the cross of the world body. Then the Rosicrucian teacher challenges the pupil to compare fleshy matter with plant-like virginal matter. A time will come when the desires and passions of human beings will have been so purified as to achieve a stage where their radiance will be turned toward the sun, They will be as chaste and without desire as virginal plants. They will so completely purify their flesh with this ideal that fertilization will take place in a chaste and pure fashion. In the Middle Ages, this ideal was portrayed in the Holy Grail. The chalice is a holy symbol for what must become of sensuality if it is to become like the blossom of a plant's calyx. Then it will be kissed by the white dove. The chalice is portrayed with the dove above it. To spiritualize the world in this way, to see human surroundings in such pictures, elevates a person to the vision of astral pictures. The feeling soul creates imagination. Third comes learning the esoteric script. The esoteric script consists in reading and imitating the inner streams of nature. The spiral is just such a sign. If you could make out the Orion Nebula clearly, you would see it as two intertwined sixes. You see there in the cloud a decaying world and a world arising. Thus it is everywhere. When a plant releases a new fruit, nothing from the old plant is carried over to the new. Nothing other than the forces themselves brings about the formation of a new plant. Here, too, you would see nothing more than a vortex spiraling in and spiraling out. In a similar way, you could see how an old culture spirals into itself, and a new one then unwinds out of it. This spiritual process can help us understand this sign of the symbolic script. 800 years before Christ's birth, the sun entered the sign of Aries, the ram or lamb. Every year it moves a little bit further. The sun now rises in the constellation of Pisces at the vernal equinox. During the first age, people believed that the lamb brought them every kind of well-being, the salvation of new forces in the spring. They even connected the Savior with this image. During the first ages of Christianity, they had as a symbol the cross with the lamb. Before the sun was in the zodiacal sign of the lamb at the beginning of spring, it was in the sign of Taurus, the bull. At that time, the Egyptians worshipped Apis, and the Persians worshipped the bull of Mithras. After the flood, the sun stood in the sign of Cancer, the crab. The crab was given this same esoteric sign. So there are many such signs, but colors, too. Such signs were learned, signs that led us into the forces and powers of nature. The education of the will was learned in the esoteric script. Fourth is finding the Philosopher's Stone. This was understood to be a secret in the 18th century. Someone even published something about it. It is something that everyone knows about. The Philosopher's Stone is the noblest thing that a human being can acquire, what human beings can make out of their organism, in order to come to a higher stage of development. Here I would like to tell you a parable from Vedanta philosophy. People once wanted to test a man's ability to live without eyes. After a year, the man chosen to conduct the experiment said, quote, "Yes, I have lived, but as a blind man," unquote. Then he attempted to live without ears, and after a year he gave the results. He said, quote, "Yes, I have lived without ears, but as a deaf man," unquote. His voice was taken away, and he lived dumb. Then his breath was also to be taken away, but that did not work. Without breath he could not live. Breath gives us the air of life, quote, "And God breathed into man, and he became a living soul," unquote. With every breath we draw in oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide. Plants have a precisely opposite circulation. Plants construct their bodies out of carbon. That is why we find fossilized plants in coal, even after thousands of years. Human beings have carbon within their bodies. They breathe in oxygen and produce carbon dioxide, which is then removed. Animals also do this. The Rosicrucian school teaches a particular way of breathing, whereby the pupil learns the process that takes place in plants. Eventually, human beings will be able to transform carbon within themselves. They will be able to transform the blue blood that flows back to the heart into red blood. They will take the spiritual essence of the plant into themselves and will one day be able to do what plants do today. A Rosicrucian says, quote, "Today your body is made of flesh, but one day you will be able to build it up yourself through your breathing. The essence of plantness will appear in you, but you will not sleep as plants do. You will be clairvoyant at the same time." End quote. We are advancing toward this goal, the goal of constructing our bodies from carbon. Ordinary carbon, or coal, is the philosopher's stone. It will not be black coal, but transparent as water, carbon, when the human body has become star-like. These are not just chemical processes, but rather high ideals. Rosicrucians progress toward this goal in stages, and later all humanity will ascend to it. Fifth is the knowledge of the human being as a microcosm. The world expands through all of nature, and the human being is an extract of the world. Everything in the world is spread out as letters, and the human being is the word that they spell. Lawrence Oken, 1779 to 1851, and Friedrich von Schelling, 1775 to 1854, expounded entirely correct basic ideas at the start of the 19th century. They sought to understand the being that corresponds to each organ. Oken became a little grotesque when he said that the tongue corresponds to an octopus. Goethe said that the eye, E-Y-E, was made by light for light. We come to know the true nature of light only when we find in the human being what corresponds to light. The teacher gives the pupils, as a guiding principle, the task of concentrating on a point, on the organ located behind the root of the nose. They thereby come to know the nature of dream consciousness in addition to modern clear day consciousness. The pupils come to understand the whole world of meditation on the spleen, the liver, and the other internal organs. Once they have expanded their consciousness through this kind of meditation, excessive brooding on the organs is, however, dangerous. They merge together with the whole world. Sixth is knowledge of the macrocosm. Anyone having acquired the knowledge of the previous step will recognize the Creator behind all creation. And seventh is knowledge of divine blessedness. At the seventh stage, we achieve a point where from the depths of the human soul, a feeling for everything in the universe is called forth as well as a feeling of blessedness, to which we are really entitled only at this step. Living into every individual thing with clarity is divine blessedness. We discover here the soul of nature resting behind the appearances. Someone once said to me, quote, "I never thought that a stone feels something when pounded upon." Unquote. The spirit of the mineral kingdom feels the greatest pleasure, blessedness itself, when stone is pounded into pieces. When it appears to us that a marble quarry must feel martyrdom, actually, the spirit of stone feels the greatest blessedness. Now you could say, why aren't these details told to humanity? Someone once said that this knowledge could be very useful for humankind. I answered him that people would want to take selfish advantage of these facts, and that these secrets can be placed only in the most selfless service of humanity. Rosicrucians know this secret, and those people who now walk through the world serving human progress tell us what it is that leads to progress, for they know how the chemical wedding can occur. The end of Lecture 4.4.